Hello, I'm Greg Johnston. Welcome to Imagining the Past, the 2023 season. HNSA acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which we work and live, and recognises their continuing connection to the land, water, and community. We pay respects to elders past, present, and emerging. The Historical Novel Society Australasia promotes the reading, writing and publishing of historical fiction through our biennial conferences and online programs. The ARA Historical Novel Prize is now the richest genre-based literary award in Australasia, a breathtaking $100,000 divided between the adult and CYA categories. Claire Saxby is the best-selling author of fiction, non-fiction, and poetry for children, and the winner of many prizes. Her poems appear in magazines, anthologies, on train walls, and in museum resources. Her novel, The Wearing of the Green, was shortlisted for the 2022 ARA Historical Novel Prize, CYA category. It's a great pleasure to welcome Claire Saxby to Imagining the Past.
Hello, welcome.
It's great to have you with us. Look, there's something I'm always fascinated to ask people. It's, when did you first start to think of yourself as a writer?
Oh gosh, I think it depends on the day. But when did I realise that making stories was what I wanted to do? It was quite late in life. Although I wrote as a child, I had a deviation into a health career for 20 years. And it wasn't until after that that I started thinking that really what I loved, even in that other career, was the gathering of stories. And from that, I guess there wasn't such a big jump into making stories.
So what was your health career?
I was a podiatrist.
Right. And so you've written, I think it's about 29 books. That's, I mean, that's quite a lot. And over what time period have they been written?
Probably close to the same number of years, maybe 25 years.
And what excited you about CYA? What led you into that?
I did some writing classes and I did a number of things. I had small children and I thought short stories were the place to start. But as anyone who writes short stories knows, they're one of the most difficult forms. And so I then tried on a whole lot of other different styles of writing. But when I started writing for children and young adults, I just felt like I'd found my voice. I like that I don't have to write for the same age group all the time. I can write for toddlers and I can write for young adults, depending on the particular story and how I want it to be. I can write more widely and not have to do the same thing all the time.
And what was the first hint you got of Biddy Blackwell and The Wearing of the Green?
It wasn't Biddy. Biddy took a while to take shape. The story that I first found was the decade actually in Melbourne between 1850 and 1860. Much is written about the gold fields, but I wanted to understand how a city, a gateway city, took shape in the face of such enormous influx of people, and it took me three goes to find Biddy, but it was only when I found Biddy that the story started to come together as a cohesive blend of person, of character, setting and challenge.
So what were some of the other ideas you had around this?
One of them, I had a child who was on a farm coming into the town, because it was always Melbourne town that I wanted to be a character. I wanted it to be, to talk about its energy and its change and how it gave a freedom to a young female character that was not possible beforehand and may not be possible once the society became more stable and regulated. So I had a girl who came in with her brother, and then I had another version where a girl was in Melbourne and left to look for her father, who has disappeared. But they didn't work. I'd get about 30,000 words into the story and realise it wasn't right. And it also took me out of Melbourne, and what I wanted to be was in Melbourne.
It's great, the experimentation, the kind of the gyres that lead you to a story.
Yes.
So what age is the novel aimed at?
Well, I see it as being for upper primary and early secondary. It seems to have a readership beyond that. Many adults have read it and enjoyed it, but that is my target audience. I see newly, on the cusp of teenage and making their own decisions about their lives and understanding that they might have to take control of some of the elements of their lives. In the way that Biddy does when she needs to remove herself from certain situations and where she needs to adjust her expectations and her but still hold on to her dreams. And so that's sort of where I see it, in that sort of tween area where even contemporary children are doing exactly the same thing.
I'm interested in what you think are the differences between CYA and adult fiction, even down to the level of the construction of the story, the grammar, and the word choices.
Oh, I try really hard to make my language both accessible but rich. I write a lot of picture books where I have to make word pictures evocative with very few words. And I try and use the same things that I would use, same sort of devices that I would use, but of course I've got more space to do more of them. As for how they're different to adult, I've written adult poetry, but not adult prose. I haven't had anybody who is an adult read it and say, this feels childish to me. The responses sometimes are, I wish it was longer, but then that sometimes is the response from young readers as well. So I'm not sure I can, I don't know if I can articulate what would be different. Length is certainly one thing. I did have to pull back from some of the interactions on the farm, when Biddy's on a farm. I wanted to make them as honest as I could, but I needed to pull back from some of the graphic depictions of what would be there. So maybe that is something to be aware of. If I'm going to have something terrible happen, I have to frame it in a way that's not going to be traumatic to a young audience, but is not going to also sugarcoat. So it's a sort of a balancing act.
There's quite a bit of like exposition and backstory in the opening pages, I thought, when they're coming into Melbourne. Do you think maybe that's one thing that's the difference between CYA fiction and adult? Because it seemed like you were pegging certain things in the story very severely and quite rigidly, and maybe in CYA they need to be expressed in that way so that the story can move easily around them.
Yes, although I would also say that Biddy's world is incredibly contained and her experience is very contained. So in those early pages, she has no ability to see much beyond this very limited world that she's had. She's grown up in a one-bedroom house when they did have a house, and then she's been in a poor house, and then she's been in a ship. And so her world experience is incredibly narrow, and survival has been such an important element of her life. And she's only where she is because of that. but it is also because the walls are so very tight around that world. And I wanted an almost claustrophobic feel to that beginning before the landing on this corner of Australia, which has then this opening up of landscape and both internal and external.
The book's set is told using past tense, which is quite rare nowadays, I find. What were your decisions you made around that, and also about using third person point of view?
I guess I wanted to have some perspectives outside of Biddy's experience, so the third person allowed me to do that. The past tense, I'm starting to work on something new now, and I've just written the same opening passages in past tense, present tense, third person, and first person. And somehow, often it's not a conscious decision, but it's in reading them and then reading those bits out loud, I get a sense of just what fits for this story. So it's probably more unconscious. It's an about feel. I don't know that I could analyze it. I grew up in a time when grammar wasn't, and all of those things weren't often given names. And so it's in the doing and the listening to that I get a sense of what is right for this particular story.
I think that's a very good experiment to do at the beginning of a book when you're writing it, because I had to change from, I think it was third person to first person, and I'd written like a substantial amount of a novel, and it was a lot of work to do it. So, and I think you're right about the feel of it, that it just, when you do those experiments, you'll just find the one that feels right. Do you think there's a kind of a pedagogical aspect to CYA fiction? I'm thinking about even, you know, as basic as exposing children to correct grammar.
Certainly not from my perspective. A lot of my work is used in schools, and it's used for language, as mentor texts. The picture books are often used, and in mentor texts, they're actually literally substituting words into sentences that I've constructed. I find it inspiring that teachers are doing that with children, but I certainly do not construct anything with any sort of prescription on what readers should get from it and what they should learn from it. With the novel, with Biddy, I started out, well, when I got to Biddy's story, what I was trying to do was look at my family story. Literature now, particularly for children and young adults, is including a lot of the diversity that has been absent for a really, really long time. And those are not my stories to tell. So for a while, I was a bit adrift thinking about what was my story and, you know, my story in arriving here. And I had to go back, you know, to my 3G grandfather to find that world. And that's when I found this decade in Melbourne. And that's when I found that this is the time and the experience that is that of my family. And that's what I wanted to explore. Now, I didn't have anybody who was an Irish famine orphan girl, but my antecedent arrived in that same decade. And once I started exploring that decade, and some of the potential freedoms that were available there, could be available there, then it became even more fascinating for me to set a story in that world.
Yeah, it's a lot of pressure now to be inclusive of as broad a palette of people as you can. I mean, while I was reading it, I was kind of wondering about myself and how, you know, a young boy in Tasmania, perhaps already with a penchant for wearing the pink, would locate himself in this novel, and if you had thought about such things when you were writing it.
I didn't think specifically about, I can't represent all of the things, but I was aware, not so much in diversity in our, white population, but I did think about how to represent an Indigenous presence, not a voice, because that's not my story to tell. And I see my role as if I'm writing in a period where there was a wide range of, if the Indigenous presence was there, then I need to show it, even though I'm not representing it as being of it. And by putting them in there, like, that's one less group that's erased from the versions of history that we have. I tried to put, there were bits that came out of the novel because there was too much death and too much truth, I guess, because a lot of those things can't be, are tricky to put into a novel if I wanted to keep it under young adult. If I'd wanted it to be a fully young adult book, then I could have been broader in my inclusion of different groups of people. But I had to choose what I could put in and support, and having a representation of the Indigenous population felt to me like a really important thing to have.
It would have been very remiss not to have some representation there. I guess you've kind of touched on this a bit, but I mean, there must be severe limits of what Biddy could be exposed to, particularly when she was on the farm. So were those decisions made during the editing process, or had you made them during the writing process, or how did that kind of come about?
There was a bit of both. Most early readers, if they walked too often in the same places, then I would look at it and tone it down or extract, take out the bits that were too challenging for them. It's one of the things when you're diving so deeply and you really want to represent this time without sugarcoating any of it, it is so tempting to make it as accurate as you can, but I just had to do that in a way that is going to be accessible to the readership rather than alienate them, or in terms of these books being used in schools and school curriculums, I have to make sure that it is not going to offend the gatekeepers in such a way that the story doesn't get to the reader.
Because you had an Irish population who would have been, particularly at that age, at that time that the novel set, speaking a very different kind of dialect of English, I would have imagined. How did you negotiate that for a modern reader? Because you needed to give the Irish lilt to the language, but it couldn't have been alienating to a modern reader.
No, and I suspect that it would have been Gaelic, and versions of Gaelic. So even, you know, Gaelic speakers from close by areas wouldn't understand each other. I did want to have some of the some sense that their language is different. I went to Ireland in the researching of this novel and spent time. We travelled all around Ireland from cities to very, very remote parts of the coast, the west coast. And the language is enormously different now from some that are very easy for our ear to unravel and some that are very challenging to understand. And that's without going into the Gaelic speaking areas. I guess I hope that it doesn't come across as cliched, but the things that the phrases and things that are used now, I tried to use some of those, but in a way that didn't give them an age. And I can read, like, the name of the novel comes from a song from 1795, And by my choir sings this song and sang it for the launch of this novel. And I, listening to the language that goes in there, I was also able to sort of pick up just little bits that again inform the way Biddy thinks and the way she talks, and the it's in the word she uses as well as the way she uses them that makes a distinction.
I guess migration under any conditions, I think, is an incredibly difficult thing. I think it's often forgotten that the British who came here were migrants because of, you know, British culture became dominant and English language became dominant. How many arrivals, or was the arrival of so many Irish Catholic women, I guess mainly for the dual purpose of labour and marriage, domestic labour and marriage, was that a concern in the colony at that time?
Yes, it was, put simply. These ships, 22 ships, shiploads of girls who came, were mostly between the ages of 14 and 18. So they were girls. They had, many of them, known very little other life rather than abject poverty. So their skills, their house skills, were not necessarily what established families would have expected. And so there was often a lot of tension between the people who were hiring them as servants and these Irish girls who, you know, as in the start of the novel, where they have such a small worldview but such a will to live, that was wasn't often a happy meeting. And there was a lot of press around the willfulness of these girls, but I feel like that willfulness was a survival trait to be alive, to have endured the poverty and the death and the loss of all of their families and still be alive. These girls were unsurprisingly not going to take any rubbish from anyone. And the new middle classes that sort of were coming, you know, they're people who had some money and some security and wanted to emulate the upper classes and have servants, didn't always have any skills to teach these Irish girls. And so they were often butting heads with expectations and realities. And that's one of the reasons that the Earl Grey scheme, which is what brought the ships here, only lasted a very short time, a few years.
Right. It's a remarkable story, really, isn't it?
It really is. The Earl Grey was he was in the British Parliament and he was Minister for the Colonies, and he saw the opportunity to empty these really crowded poorhouses at the same time as addressing the gender imbalance in Australia. And he thought, I think he would have thought it was a masterstroke to have two things happening. But in that particularly English upper class way, it was an imposed decision making, and none of it took into account the individuals and the experience that they'd had. And it was a puppet master sort of task, you know, let's just fix this, move these things around the board without any real thought of the consequences of that for those who were sent to the other side of the world.
It's almost a soft serve version of the convicts system, really, isn't it? So
very similar. Yeah.
And you mentioned at the beginning of the interview that it took you a while to find the thing that gave you the trajectory of the novel. So had you known about this scheme before, or did you actually discover that while you were researching the novel?
I very peripherally, and not as a separate standalone scheme. You know, I was aware of the Irish migrations and being as a consequence of the famines over there, but I wasn't aware of this Earl Grey scheme and these girls. Or not the detail of it. I had heard stories about girls pretty much being picked up, you know, ship came into dock, somebody went and rounded up girls and put them on the boat. So it was that general, but it wasn't this very ordered, very organized scheme that brought them. And once I found the details of that, then it, you know, they were given more clothes than they would ever have had. They were given the opportunity, some of them, to learn to read and write, which was not many of them would have taken that up. But there was specifics there that gave me the opportunity to put a girl who had yearnings for, even though she didn't really fully realize them at the start, she was just fixed on trying to find her brother. But she discovers that she's got these other curiosities. And I think curiosity is one of the foundational things I want to offer a reader, whatever their age they are. I want them to explore curiosity. And having Biddy have this set of skills, I was able to really explore her curiosity and set it as a really strong element in the novel.
So The Wearing of the Green was shortlisted for the ARA Historical Novel Prize last year. I'm just wondering, what did that mean to you to be shortlisted, and what do you see the role of kind of prizes like that in a, you know, a more general sense?
What did it mean to me? It was incredibly exciting, but also validating. This is my second novel. I have been writing picture books for a really long time, and some of them do very well. But this is my first longer form, and to have somebody, it's an organization like the Historical Novel Association, see the value in it and recognize it was very validating. But also it means that I can go out with more confidence and share it. We're all fragile creatures, we writers. And although, you know, my mum would always say that, you know, not looking for external validation, it doesn't hurt at all. It helps quite a lot to have others understand or tell you that you have achieved what you were setting out to achieve. I think it's a really valuable thing for writers to be able to have their books, by recognition in this way, offered to a broader audience.
So what's next for you?
Well, if you'd asked me 3 or 4 days ago, I was juggling two potential projects. And in the last couple of days, I've worked out that, well, I knew that I can only juggle one at a time, and I have fixed on that, and it will be multi-time connected by a place. And so the place is going to give up its stories in some way yet to be unpacked.
Well, that sounds exciting. A nice thing to move through, a nice process to move through. Do you think you'll ever venture into adult fiction? I mean, you've kind of shown us today that you've moved from picture books to a longer form of the novel. Do you think you may, like, wander into an adult novel?
I don't know that I've moved from picture books to novels. I've just included novels in the things I write. Some stories will not be contained in a picture book format. I love the picture book format. I love doing old books for younger readers and older readers in that format. I think this is an addition rather than a replacement for writing those things. I don't know. I sometimes, but I quite like writing for young people. I think it's a really rich role to be able to do that, and to be able to connect with younger readers. And I like, it's kind of nice to be able to read adult novels and absorb the techniques that they're using and then use them in what I'm doing without having to look at their construction in a way that I'm trying to emulate. So In that way, sometimes novels, adult novels, both literary and commercial, are my escapism away from the responsibilities and the joys of creating for a particular audience of younger people.
It's always important to restack your closet with ideas. All right. Well, I'd like to thank you for your time today. I've really enjoyed our chat, and good luck with the future writing.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you for having me here.
Thank you for listening to Imagining the Past, the 2023 season. Please remember to step back in time to our podcast archive, where you'll find interviews with many a luminary. Subscribe to the podcast series to be notified when new episodes drop. Also, visit our website, hnsa.org.au, subscribe to our newsletter, and join our Facebook group to be effortlessly up to date with all that's hip and happening in historical fiction. I'm Greg Johnston. It's so good to have your company imagining the past.